上人、法师、各位善知识，大家阿弥陀佛。我是静玉啊，因为即将有远行，所以法师希望我跟大家分享这几年我在圣城的心得。
Venerable Master, Dharma Master, and all good and wise advisors, my name is Jing Yu, and since I'm about to go to a faraway place, the Dharma Master asked me to come and speak with everybody about my experience and reflections from the past few years.
记得在我大学第四年的时候，我的教育哲学老师曾经提醒我们，在以后的教书生涯里面，每年应该要找时间把《论语》拿出来再复习一遍。我当然非常清楚，老师他期许我们能够当一位人师，不是当一个教书匠。
In my fourth year of college, my professor on the philosophy of education said to us that in the future, when you go out to teach, you should take out the Analects of Confucius and review it every year, which was to remind us that we are teaching people to be human beings and not just whatever subjects or the content of the subjects that we're teaching.
我们很快的就投入到教育的工作行业里面。在所有家长跟老师一致的期许之下，我们唯一的目标就是把学生送到最好的高中。那时候我们只看到他们的学业，几乎忽略了他们在唱歌、美术、体育等等这一方面的才能，而且常常会忽略他们那一颗美丽善良的心。我记得有一次，我的一个同事跟我们大家说，我们从事了全世界最好的一个行业，因为我们可以合法的骂人家，骂完了之后呢，那些人还要跟我们敬礼说谢谢你。你就可以知道在这样的一个环境之下，我们的自我膨胀的有多大。
So quickly I entered the teaching profession, and out of sort of a mutual agreement between the parents and teachers, we found that our aim was to prepare students to send them to the best high schools. And so we looked at only their academic performances and neglected whatever skills they might have had in singing or music or art or PE or sports. Also, we didn't look at their beautiful and kind hearts. Once there was a teacher who said that we had the best job in the world, because we're allowed to scold people for our jobs. And often after we scolded them, people will bow and thank us for doing that. So you can see how this job really worked to serve our egos.
一直等到1995年，我到圣城来常住。在前几年，我教的学生大部分也是以中文为母语为主，所以情况没有太大的改变。一直等到大概三年之后，有一次校长他跟我讲，他说你要不要去教教幼稚园的太极课，每天就只有30分钟。我心想半个钟头8个小孩子，我应该是没有问题。
And it wasn't until 1995 when I came to live as a long-term resident in the city of 10,000 Buddhas. And the first few years I taught primarily Chinese-speaking students, and that wasn't didn't really present much difficulty. But 3 years into it, the principal said to me, "Are you interested in teaching the kindergartners Tai Chi? It's only going to be 30 minutes a day." And I thought, 30 minutes a day to 8 kids, that shouldn't be too much of a problem.
在前开始的几个月还好，有一天不知道发生什么事情，我去上课，一个小孩子就躲在桌子底下，怎么都不肯出来。那我好说歹说，我就说你要出来，还没说完，第二个就进去了。再想要把两个劝出来的时候， 第三个又躲到桌子底下去了，所以整堂课呢，一半的人在桌子底下。那时候呢，就找出了其中一个，然后呢，我就说，你再不乖，我就要把你送到校长室。我话还没有说完，没有想到，才7岁不到的他，他就说，我就要把你送回去，请你家长来接你回去。
The first few months, there weren't really any problems. And one day, I went into class, and one of the kids was hiding beneath the table and didn't come out. And so I said, "Okay, come out." But before I had finished ordering the first kid to come out, a second kid crawled under the table and stayed there. And then before I had finished telling the second kid to come out, the third kid went back in and hid under the table. So during class that day, about half the kids remained under the table. And so I said to one of the kids, "If you don't listen and if you aren't good, then I'm going to send you to the principal's office." And the kid responded back immediately, "If you're not good, I'm going to go and send you to the parents." And at that moment, I saw very clearly how educating children was really a reflection or a mirror for me.
另外一个故事呢，是发生在前2年的时候。这一个学校很小，有的时候呢，我们会可能只有3个人就组成一班。我觉得他们很幸福，他们也觉得很习惯这样的幸福。 这个是秋季班的时候，等到春季班的时候呢，就有同学跟我讲，老师，我们去参加抢答赛，就是中国文化常识比赛，好不好？那我心想，好，所以就打算呢，把两个班级给合并在一起。但是呢，他们三个呢，已经习惯了拥有一个老师，他们现在不愿意10个人 分一个老师，所以其中一个同学呢，好说歹说，他就是抵死不从。And
I also saw that this is part of the way that I was teaching. This is my philosophy behind my education when I said this to this kid. And the next story is that happened a few years ago, and this is a very small school, and so often we're often able to offer very small classes. And this class in particular was only 3 students, and the students were really happy with it. And in the fall, everything went by. And however, in the spring, a student came up and said that she wanted to suggest the class participating in a Chinese cultural knowledge competition, which would require us to merge two classes. So from our previous class of 3 students, we became a class of 10. And many students found that it was very difficult because all of a sudden they had to share their teacher with so many other students.
我心想我可以说服他，我跟他讲说，这些课程其实他们都没学过，那我就想，这些土生土长的华裔，他们可以教他们英文，那他们可以当我的小老师，可是怎么样，他都不愿意。这时候呢，我脑子里头我就闪过了一次我去参加教育心理学的讲习会。 那个教授呢跟我们分享，因为在时下的家长跟老师常常会碰到你所谓不听话的孩子，那就需要有一些的技巧。那我们常常会用，比如说那个人叫做张小妹，张小妹，你给我过来，你如果再不过来的时候，我就过去。
And so one day a student came up to me and she was very unhappy with this change. And I tried to persuade the student because I was confident I thought it would work out. That for the students who had lower Chinese levels, they could teach me English and it would also work the other way around. And it made me think of an educational psychology lecture or session I had participated in, and there the speaker said that for troublesome kids, often we use strategies such as come here. If you don't come here, I'm going to go over there.
我想到我们佛教的道理也是这样子的，是一个反向的操作。所以我那一天帮我的时候， 我就赶快去找一个阿姨，我就跟她讲，你明天到我的课堂上，你就到教室办公室去等，我会送一个学生过去。可是我也很怕这个小孩子，他会很享受一对一的教学，所以我又跟这个阿姨讲，我就说，你就教他最无聊的古书。 你就光教他背就好。结果当然不出我所料，不到一节课，他就乖乖的回来了。从此再也没有人敢跟我讲，我要到其他的班级去。And
I thought that this was very similar to a lot of Buddhist teachings I'd encountered, and so I looked for an auntie, and so this strategy of approaching or dealing with kids is sort of a reversal of what they expect. And so in this particular situation, I looked for an auntie and I asked her to please go stay in the office. And if I had difficulty with this girl, then I would send the student there. But I was afraid that she would actually just enjoy the one-on-one attention. And so I said, select a really boring classic and have her memorize it. And so after one class, she was sent there, and after she came back, she didn't really want to do that again. And afterwards, there was also no more difficulty with any other students not wanting the class to be held that way.
纵观我在圣城这十几年来的教育工作，我很感激，常常有法师会跟我讲，你要把你自己的身体心理照顾好，因为这样子呢，你才能够照顾那一群小孩子。我深深的受到感动，在万佛圣城，我的教育哲学老师所提醒我们的孔子的理想，教育理想在这一个地方实现，我自己的教育理想也在这一个地方得到了体现。这一群孩子，我们不仅仅是师生关系，我们也是朋友，我们更是一家人。
In my 10-odd years of teaching here at the City of 10,000 Buddhas, I feel a lot of gratitude because often there are Dharma masters who say to me, you have to take care of your own body and mind so that you are able to take care of the children that you teach. And I was deeply moved by this because at the City of 10,000 Buddhas, the educational philosophy of Confucius is practiced and realized, and my own ideal for education is also realized. With the students here, not just do we have a student-teacher relationship, but often it's also friendship as well as a sense of family.
我自己非常喜欢我们中国古时候师生之间的这一种称呼。我们以前称老师叫师父，是一种老师跟父亲中间的一个关系，称学生叫做弟子，所以把所有学生呢当做自己的弟弟儿女这样子来照顾，所以中间不仅有一种温馨，更有一种责任。我想要说的是，圣城跟这一群孩子他们所给我的永远比我给他们的还要来得多得多。
I like the ancient Chinese term for students and teachers, and for teachers it's 师父, which is both teacher as well as father, and for student it's 弟子, which is both a younger brother, younger sibling, or a child. So this brings a sense of closeness as well as a sense of responsibility to the relationship. And the City of 10,000 Buddhas and the kids that I teach have both given me much more than I have ever given them.
我有一个很深的一个感觉，这几年在圣城，在学校，我慢慢的看到的是每一个学生的不同，可是他们都拥有一颗非常善良的心。跟这一群善良、有正气的人在一起，每天我们中间的互动就只有愉快。有的时候，当然他们也会有所谓不乖、不做功课的时候，但是我就跟他们处理这些当下的那些问题，没有永远不失他们有一颗善良美丽的本性。
I deeply feel that in these past few years at CTTB and at the school, though I saw many different students, they all have very good and kind hearts. And every day to be able to be with all of these kind hearts and minds is a very happy thing. Of course, sometimes troubles come up or students don't do homework or something like that. But I deal with these issues then and there. And I always look at their beautiful and kind natures that are always there.
接下来我想要跟大家分享我最喜欢的民族之英雄之一。我想在座的各位应该对南宋的文天祥不会太陌生。
Next, I would like to share with everybody a favorite folk hero of mine, and I think that Wen Tianxiang of the Southern Song Dynasty is probably a familiar name to many people here.
大家都知道宋朝它的基本国策是重文轻武，因为它鼓励所有人去读书。 他很少鼓励人去做军事的这一个准备，所以呢，他的国势呢一直都很弱，也就是说，他一直都有外患去威胁他自己的国家。在南宋末年的时候，他最大的一个外患呢就是蒙古大军。当蒙古大军他大举 挥军南下的时候，长江的防线失守了。那当然，朝廷就下令所有的将军要勤王。可是，没有一个人这么做。那当时候呢，文天祥他其实呢，他是一个读书人，他并不懂得带兵打仗，但是呢，他就觉得 他应该要为国家做一点什么。And
the national policy of the Song Dynasty was that they emphasized literary accomplishment and de-emphasized military ability. And so that made the country fairly weak in terms of their military strength. And outside forces would often threaten the country. Near the end of the Song Dynasty, the Southern Song Dynasty, their greatest threat was the Mongol army. And when the Mongol army attacked and passed the Changjiang, the Yangtze River, the emperor ordered everybody to defend them, but most people didn't. And Wen Tianxiang was actually a scholar and didn't know how to lead well.
所以呢，他就把他的家产变卖了，组织了一支10,000多个人的义军来抵抗蒙古大军，当然。 他们最后就兵败，文天祥也被抓到了北京去。他在北京呢，被关了3年。当时候呢，元世祖他想要利用这一个状元宰相，他想要招降他，所以呢，其他的汉民就可以归附。
So he sold his family's belongings and gathered together an army of 10,000 men to defend the country. However, they lost, and he was captured and brought to Beijing. There he was locked for 3 years. The emperor, however, actually wanted him to surrender.
Uh, 在期间他关在北京的大牢里面，他有一天收到了他女儿来的信，信里头写他的太太跟两个女儿都被抓了，然后呢在宫中里面做奴隶，生活非常非常的苦。当然文天祥心里头很清楚，这一个是元世祖他想要他投降的一个伎俩，他也知道只要他投降的话，他的太太、他的女儿、他的家人从此就可以过着荣华富贵的生活。
More specifically, it was the Yuan Emperor, so the emperor of the Mongol army, which had won, wanted him to surrender so that he would fully be, so victory would be complete for him. And one day while he was in prison, he received a letter from his daughter saying that his wife and his two daughters were captured and they were in the emperor's palace as servants and led a very difficult life. And he understood that this was a strategy by the Yuan emperor to cause him to surrender. And he also understood that if he did surrender, his wife and daughters would live in great comfort and luxury and did not have to lead their difficult lives anymore.
但是呢，他决定他不要做一个叛国的人。他被关在北京的大牢里面，大家可以想想看，那个房子大概就只有两个人这样子宽，只有一个窗户，他可以看到现在是白天还是黑夜。那常常如果下雨的时候，雨水打进来，他的床就会飘起来，他的吃喝拉睡都在那个地方，所以太阳一起来的时候，他那个晦气土气全部通通都上来。他在正气歌里面他这样子说，很多人都受不了这样子恶劣的环境，不是生病就是死，可是三年下来他为什么还可以安然无恙呢？就是因为有一个正气。那现在我们就要问，什么是正气？我觉得正气就是我们每天早晚课我们念的六大宗旨。
But he decided that he would not do this to his country. And so he would remain locked in Beijing in a house that was two people wide with one window through which he could see if it was day or night. And when it rained, his bed would get wet, and his eating and sleeping and excreting all took place in this tiny little space. And in the righteous energy song that, or song of righteous energy that he wrote, he said that many people can't stand these conditions. If they do not fall sick, then they are dead. Then how can I stand this for 3 years with peace of mind? It is because I have proper energy. And so what is proper energy? It is something that I think we cultivate here at the City of 10,000 Buddhas at the morning and evening ceremonies, which are the six great principles.
那我们现在就要反问我们自己，我们每天早晚念一遍，到底对我们的修行有没有任何的帮助？所以，常常祖师大德师父都会告诉我们，念起念觉，我们这一颗心 虽然像猴子一样常常上上下下，但也是，也就是我们的用功处。如果我们好好的看着它，那我们修行就会有很大的进步。
I think now we can reflect that every day, morning and night, we recite these six great principles. But do we have these principles in our practice? The great sages and patriarchs of the past say that due to thoughts, we fall.
You're afflicted.
We are afflicted, and due to thoughts, we become awakened. And our minds are like monkeys. However, if we can cultivate our minds so that we can use them skillfully, then that's also a path to liberation.
最后祝大家吉祥如意，万佛圣尘，正法永驻，阿弥陀佛。
Lastly, I wish that everything will go smoothly and successfully and auspiciously, and that the proper Dharma will forever dwell at the city of 10,000 Buddhas. Amitabha.